welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note to indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. The city of Muncie, recognized as somehow representative of America during the famous Middletown studies, is once again being tapped to represent the national mood. A reporter from the Guardian newspaper in the UK has been in the city, talking to locals about this election and the state of the nation, at least as it appears from Delaware County. The series by reporter Gary Young is worth a look if you're curious about how the region looks to a visitor and what that may mean for this tumultuous political year. One person who's been a careful reader is Ball State History Professor James Connolly, director of the Center for Middletown Studies. Connolly is quoted in one of the Guardian stories. He's the right person to ask if you're wondering, is Muncie really Middletown? Meaning, is the city actually that typical of America as a whole?
Well, it's really Middletown in the sense that it's the place where people have been coming since the 1920s to understand broader things about American society, American culture. The question that really lurks behind the is it really Middletown is, are we really a typical community? And if you're going to measure it in a demographic sense, we are not, and really never have been. You know, one of the things about Muncie in the 1920s when Robert and Helen Lynn first came to conduct the first Middletown study was they picked a place that was both industrial and in a cultural or an ethnic sense homogenous, or in a racial sense homogenous, or so they believed. And so that in itself was kind of an odd choice, because in the United States in the early 20th century, pretty much every place that was industrial had immigrants. Muncie was one of a handful of places that you could say was industrial but did not have a large immigrant population.
Unlike South Bend, for example,
which ironically enough was the other possibility. And in the end, the Lynns rejected South Bend because it was too big and too diverse. And that made it too complicated. What they really cared about was the relationship between the working class and what they called the business class.
Why wasn't Muncie more diverse?
That's an interesting story, and we don't have a full and clear explanation. Part of it had to do with, or some of it has had to do with timing. The United States experienced two very large waves of immigration, one from, say, 1880 to 1924, and that is the period when Muncie industrialized. And at that time, Muncie's employers, the Ball family and others, were resistant to hiring immigrants, and they actually sought out white Southerners who would come up from Kentucky, Tennessee, from other rural places in the Midwest and the Upper South, because they believed that those workers would do two things. One is they'd go home in slack time. So if the factory shut down for a couple months in the summer because business was slow, they weren't going to hang around and cause trouble. They'd go home to their farms and so forth. And the other thing is they believed they wouldn't bring in these dangerous political ideas that immigrants had. So that was a piece of it. And that sort of set the template in many ways for the city. And then the second big wave of immigration is in the late 20th and early 21st centuries now. And during that period, Muncie has been declining economically, at least, or has been losing its industrial employment base. And as a result of that, immigrants have gone elsewhere to where you find thriving economies and work opportunities. So in both junctures, for different reasons, Muncie hasn't attracted the diverse population that most other industrial centers did attract.
Are there echoes of that migration from the South? And I'm thinking of the Southern accents that I hear sometimes when I'm in Muncie.
Oh, absolutely. And there's been some interesting research done, both academic research and journalistic work, including by the Star Press, about the presence of a lot of people who trace their ancestry back to Tennessee. Jamestown, Tennessee, most famously, is the town where you can find there's lots of people who have relatives in Jamestown and relatives in Muncie, and there's still today even movement back and forth between the two. And so there is a very strong sort of Upper South feel to Muncie, and really to Indiana as a whole. You can find that this is true of Martinsville, Indiana. This is true of a number of other communities around the state.
Sometimes Indiana is described as a part of the South kind of jutting up into the Midwest.
That's right, yes. I've heard that expressed in a number of different ways.
A number of different ways, I know.
Some more suitable for radio than others.
Right. Yeah. Well, so are we Middletown today in the way that we were back then? I mean, so much has changed with regard to the economy, for example.
Well, we're not again, it goes back to, are you looking for the demographically typical place? If that's the claim you want to make, then we don't hold up very well. But we didn't hold up very well in the 1920s. It was a big attraction to think of a city that was both modern and mostly white, mostly native-born, mostly Protestant, as the real America. That was a very attractive idea just on the heels of this huge wave of immigration. Now, today, we're not in the age of multiculturalism. I don't think there's many people who would argue that Muncie is demographically representative. But I do think that the city embodies trends that are pretty significant to the broader American experience now. So do a lot of other places.
Economic dislocation.
Exactly. Right. There's an element of globalization, economic globalization, that's evident here. There's an element of the impact of technology on our economy that's evident here. And the advantage you have when you come here, as opposed to Kokomo, Indiana, or Upper Sandusky, Ohio, which is the other place that tracks as close to national norms as we do, if you come here, you've got this enormous record of research that precedes you. So you can make comparisons with what the city was like in the 50s or what the city was like in the 20s. And so you have this base that you can build upon in a way that you don't anywhere else, just by the happenstance that the Lynch chose Muncie.
Do you suppose that there are any lessons about the mood of America to be found here in Muncie? That's what Gary Young seemed to be looking for, right? This is a place that voted against the sort of the major party wishes, supporting Donald Trump on the Republican side, Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side.
That's right. It does seem to reflect the national mood as much as any other place. And of course, if you go out there right now, you'll find journalists settling down and visiting all kinds of communities. Vigo County, as we discussed before the interview, is another place that's actually gone for the winner of the presidential election almost, I think, every time, save one perhaps, or perhaps all of them in the 20th century. And Gary Young himself, who's here from The Guardian now, he spent the 2008 election season in Roanoke, Virginia, because it was a swing state. So this mode of sort of studying an American community is pretty popular. And we've certainly experienced more than our share of journalistic visitors trying to take the pulse of middle America.
The only thing that I wondered was, let's say that I think the statistic is about 1/3 of Muncie residents live below the poverty line.
That's true. I mean, we have to be careful about those statistics because we're now a college town. And so that third of the population includes a number of students. So we don't have the exact figure. And I've heard people say 20. I've heard people say 12. It's higher than we want it to be, that's for sure, because of the economic difficulties the city's experienced over the past couple of decades. But we're probably not that far out of the mainstream in terms of that.
Allstate History Professor James Connolly, Director of the Center for Middletown Studies, talking about the city of Muncie and its starring role in a series of articles in the Guardian newspaper from the UK, written by reporter Gary Young, who's been staying in Muncie and studying the community.
Indiana Weekend. Interesting people and places from across our region. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
I've heard our situation described in this way as sort of economic waves. There was the gas boom, and that lured all this industry, and it went away, and the community had to adjust. There was the tremendous manufacturing boom. That has gone away, and the community is adjusting, maybe in the rise of these maker spaces and co-working spaces and things like that. Muncie has a past of reinventing itself, and that's a cause for optimism for some folks.
There certainly is a record of reinvention in the city's past, and a record of entrepreneurship that you can build upon. It's a tradition you can, perhaps rekindle to some degree. And I do think it's valuable to see Muncie today as not simply a city in decline or a city that's experiencing these declines. It very much is a city in transition. The university's role in the community is much larger now than it was even in, say, 1990. In terms of sort of economic development perspective, in terms of the character of the community, and so that's you know, a big change. It's a center more than ever for medical services for the region. And so these are bases that the city is building on, and these are roles that the city will assume in even to an even greater degree than it has in the past. So you can, in fact, see this transition well underway. It's a difficult transition, and one of the problems is in making this transition, you have a portion of the community that's kind of left out of these changes, right? When Ball State is hiring, it's not putting it out in a star press for its professor of history. It's advertising globally and recruiting globally, and so that only very indirectly perhaps helps other parts of the community, if at all. The other thing I think it's worth remembering when we talk about the sort of industrial history of Muncie is that we had a really good run. The BorgWarner Corporation that shut down its plant in 2009, that was after 108 years in the city. And the Warner part of BorgWarner was Warner Gear, a locally created company. And so we can look at that as a huge loss, and in many ways it was, but we can also look at it as an enormous success that we had the presence of this company for over 100 years. That's a very, very good run for a city. So we can also think about the fact that we were successful for a very long time, and there's no reason that the city can't be successful again.
Do you suppose that there is anything, as we look at Muncie and its history and all this data that we have, are there lessons for other communities in any way from what we've learned?
People ask me if there's lessons from the sort of all the Middletown research that's done that we can better understand. And we're still in the middle of this transition, so I'm not sure there's any clear-cut lessons that you can draw yet or sort of models you can do, not only in terms of Muncie's experience, but also in terms of the experiences of other smaller and middle-sized cities that have made this transition. If there's anything that we can pick up on, it's that there's not a one-size-fits-all model. There are places that are close enough to a major urban center that they've been able to transform themselves into suburban residential communities. We're a little too far outside of Indy to do that. But there are other places, and we may be one, that have transformed them into college towns. And so I think Muncie is more of a college town than people want to admit. And I think that is going to become more the case going forward as well. So there's different ways in which people do it. There's some places that have been able to redevelop some manufacturing and sort of hold on to that industrial identity and that industrial base. It's hard to do that because industrial employment is even for big operations is not that great. It used to be 1,000 people. You can now do the same thing with 100 and computers and machines. So it's a much different technological environment in that case. But there isn't one way to do it, and the trick is for each community to sort of figure out what it can do and how it can sustain itself.
And people are talking about creating that sense of place. There's a lot of discussion about that.
That is, and that's one of the sort of the central ideas of sort of economic development that's really gaining hold. It's certainly gaining hold in terms of the experts we have here on campus about economic development. It's increasingly becoming something that is important in discussions of how you rebuild and revitalize Rust Belt towns. The key thing from my point of view is that as you do that, it has to be about not only reviving what's there, but addressing the challenges that the residents who are sort of been marginalized by these changes are experiencing. And how do you deal with making sure that this is a rising tide that lifts all the boats and not just some of them?
It was interesting you said a moment ago, talking about BorgWarner and Warner Gear, the great run that this company had. Muncie had a great run. Muncie had a long period, right, of growth and prosperity. The Muncie of the Middletown studies, so different than the Muncie of today. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that we get from that data that maybe helps us understand those changes better and maybe how to respond to them?
I would take this from all of the research that's been done on Muncie as Middletown. If you're going to sum up this thousands and thousands of pages along with hours of film and other interviews and everything else, if you have to sum it up in one word, it is continuity. There's a stubbornness to cultural change. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen easily. And so sometimes when you hear these conversations about the difficulties the city faced, I think people underestimate how long and how difficult that is. It takes a generation or more to make these kinds of transitions. When the Lynns came to Muncie in the 1920s, they were looking for the impact of rapid industrialization. What had it done to the community? What had it done to values, behaviors, outlooks, so forth. And what they found was it had done far less than they expected, that the city had modernized in a technological sense, it had modernized in a material sense, but it had not modernized so much in a cultural sense. And in some ways, you could make the same argument today, that we've made these significant transitions in our economy, in the material circumstances of our lives in the last 30 years. But our thinking about how the world works hasn't caught up to that, not just in Muncie, but in a lot of places. And so it's a big ask to expect a community to sort of reinvent itself overnight or even in a decade. These are transitions that take quite a while. And so if we think about it in those terms, in this sort of longer process, maybe we're not doing as badly as we think.
History professor Jim Connolly, director of Ball State's Center for Middletown Studies, talking about the series of articles in The Guardian called The View from Middletown, the effort by reporter Gary Young to understand the mood of America by what's going on here.
Well, I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town. Probably die in a small town. Oh, the small.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Are there misconceptions about Muncie, do you think?
I will say, you know, one of the things I like about the Guardian piece is that it's multi-parts, right? And so you're getting a more varied understanding of what's going on in the city. And so there's a tendency for us to sort of reduce Muncie, or reduce really almost any place sometimes, to sort of one thing. So we've had people come in here today. I actually had a phone call this afternoon from a Japanese reporter who wanted to understand white working class support for Donald Trump. And he thought this was a good place to go because this is a white working class town. Well, it is a white working class town. It's also a town with a substantial African-American community. It's also a town with a university and a hospital that makes it a center of medical and educational activity. So it's a lot of different things. And so an advantage of the Guardian pieces that have been coming out is that they acknowledge that, and they approach community life from a lot of different angles, and they don't try to boil it down to one thing. We're not a huge city, we're not a diverse metropolis where you would expect to find that kind of variety, but there's still a greater degree of complexity here than people sometimes think.
He used the expression small town. That's not quite right.
No, and that's a bit of a cliche, I suppose, that, you know, we have this sort of image of the Midwestern small town. There's also a very interesting article in the Washington Post from, I think, the last 2 days, yesterday or the day before, that does these studies of voting patterns in the Midwest, and it looks at Pennsylvania and Indiana most closely, including Muncie. And what it finds is that while we see these big swaths of red in states like Indiana and so forth, and in particular counties in the central part of states like Indiana or Illinois, but when you look even more closely at a more granular level, what you find is that the cities in these counties are blue, and it's the surrounding area that's red. And so, for instance, Muncie is has voted for the Democrats, most of the time. It's still a strong Democratic city. So there's more complexity in that sense as well. We're not just part of the swath of flyover country that all these reports about Muncie are trying to get into.
Does the center conduct research on Muncie? Or are you still?
Oh, yes. In terms of the focus on what's going on now, we have a sort of a framework for the work which we call documenting deindustrialization. In some ways, it's a name that needs to be updated because certainly we're documenting not only the loss of industry, or really, to be more precise, the loss of industrial employment, but we're also documenting the adjustments, the cultural adjustments, the social adjustments. So we were very interested now in actually working on the ways that civic life is changing, you know, the role of religious institutions and what they're doing now, which I think is a big and kind of untold story, not just here, but more generally as well. So what are the institutional bases of the community's life as the economy changes, the population, the composition of the population changes as well? So what kind of trends are we seeing along those lines?
It's interesting that the reporter from The Guardian came here, reached out through social media, encountered Kelsey Timmerman, Yvonne Thompson, finding some of the people who were sort of opinion leaders.
He did that. And the other thing is they've solicited input from different residents and members of the community, and they've gotten feedback online that's led to the next sort of reporting that they're going to do. So Young spent time with some of Trump's supporters in the Citizens for Good Government group on the recommendation of a reader. He said, you should contact these folks and talk to these folks. And so he's done that a number of times, and there's more to come, as I understand it, including a sort of a longer essay on the city after the election.
Well, and he's here because of the election, and he's trying to understand how Americans think about this. And I think a lot of Americans are trying to understand how Americans think about this. It's quite an unusual year. Yes. Any perspectives that one would gain from where your perch is? Some of the historical work that you've done includes some pretty turbulent periods in the United States during the 20s.
Sure. The same thing that fed the original Middletown research and made it so popular. You know, the story of how that project became a book is an interesting one, because the Lynns were commissioned to do a study of church life in the community, and they went way beyond their initial charge, and they did what they described as a total situation study, studying every facet of the community's life. And they brought it back to their sponsors, and the sponsors were like, well, this is not what we asked for, so we don't want it. And they didn't know what to do. They thought they had a white elephant on their hands, and they weren't sure. But they did eventually find an agent and persuade a publisher to put it out. And to their surprise, as much as anyone's, it became this massive hit. And it became a big hit in large part because this image of a modern yet still white Protestant native-born community was very appealing at that moment in time. And so you can sort of see some of the same longings now in some of our politics.
Well, in the 20s, you had this nativist reaction, didn't you?
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a backward-looking thing. It was resistance to modernism, and the Klan was certainly very, very powerful in Muncie for a couple of years in the 20s. And it was about sort of going back to what it was like before these wrenching changes took place.
Sounds like now.
Exactly. I mean, when you hear Make America Great Again, or you hear The Real America, these phrases that get kicked around, particularly on the conservative side of things, I think they are echoes of those earlier concerns that were expressed.
Time has come today. Young hearts can go that way.
James Connolly, Ball State history professor and director of the Center for Middletown Studies, talking about the series of articles in The Guardian called The View from Middletown, a look at this presidential election through the lens of the people of Muncie. You can find the series online by Googling Guardian and Middletown. And you can connect with Professor Connolly and the Center by going to bsu.edu/Middletown. Wonder what you think about the series, if you've read it, or about what actually constitutes the Middletown character and experience. Hope you'll drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft, and all the folks in the front office, including your friends Matt Bloom, Connie Clary, Lori Georgie, Emily Kowalski, Andrea Lutz, John Morgan, Angie Rapp, and Debbie Webb. Glad you could join us this time. Hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.